So the first day of a retreat is a transition time or an initiation time into the retreat. Some people think it's maybe a hazing, but it is a transition, and it's a can be a big transition, and the adjustment to being on retreat takes a day or two. There's tiredness and headaches and body aches. And so I wonder how many of you, by show of hands, have been really tired today? How many of you, your body has hurt more than you wished? How many of you had headaches today? How many of you have had minds that are out of control today? Where have the rest of you been? And how many of you have been discouraged today? Okay. I thought it was just that side of the room. Thank you, Tom. And a lot of hands went up. So if you thought that you were the only one, you are not. You had very good company. And it's also that it's not, you don't take it so personally that it's just you and your challenges, that these are the common transitional occurrences on retreat, and different retreats will be a little bit different. And so rather than seeing it as a mistake or as a problem, it's kind of the transition, it's kind of the initiation, it's kind of the chance to meet yourself and be here with what's going on. And in the most profound way is that it's a chance to learn how to be at ease with what is. And sometimes the most difficult challenges are the places where there's the most learning, growing about how to be at ease, because it's so difficult to be at ease. And these first day of the retreat is not, you know, it's a very important part of the process. So I know it can be very uncomfortable and discouraging, and people, it's not uncommon. How many of you at some point in the course of the day said, why did I sign up? There are other things I could do. So these are all, common. So, and discouragement and all that. And people who've done this for a lot, after a while, will have some of the same challenges in the first day as people who are new, but they've been through it enough times that they know this is just how it is, and so they're more gracious with it, more relaxed with it, and just kind of ride it out, and it's a lot just more at ease with, oh, here it is, this is how it is, and it'll pass as well. One of the ways to suffer is to assign a lot of meaning to it. This means that I shouldn't have signed up. This means that I'll always be this way. This means that the teachers don't know what they're saying. This means that, so just, to be relaxed, at ease, just make lots of space is really helpful in this first day. It's a radically different thing we're doing here than how most people live their lives. And maybe that's by design, so that we can see our lives in a new way. If they say that no one has an accent in their hometown, I don't know if it's exactly right, but the general idea being that you grew up in your hometown, everyone spoke the same accent, and you go traveling someplace else. And they say, wow, you have an accent. And you say, what? I thought you had the accent, but what do you mean I have an accent? Because, it's just normal, So the same way we can live our lives in a certain mindset, a certain understanding of who we are and what our life is about. And it can seem so normal, so obvious, so taken for granted that we don't see that we have an accent. We don't see we have a worldview. We don't see we have a self-identity. We have a particular orientation about what we think is important, what's going on. And what Dharma practice is trying to do is to help us to see our accent, help us to see what we're doing, and tease it apart so that we can learn how to be free, not be caught by it, have a new relationship, new understanding. And generally, our lives, our inner lives, are very different than the concepts and the general ideas that we give it. And so these five aggregates that we're talking about this retreat is one of the most common teachings of the Buddha. Over and over again, he taught this teaching about the aggregates. So it must have been very important for him. And one way of understanding it is that it's an alternative way of dividing up our experience so we can look at it in a new and a fresh way and maybe kind of begin teasing apart the concepts and ideas that we're kind of solidified around, but kind of break them open so we can see them for what they are, so we can see things in a broader way, in a more open way, in a way that maybe supports us to become free or not caught. And generally, if we see, you know, something as a, and it's in the big picture, that's not the right way of saying it, but if we generalize too much about something, take all the different components of something and generalize and just see it as one thing, then it's hard to really understand what to do and how to relate to it. So I don't know why this is coming to mind. I apologize if this raises all kinds of thoughts in your mind. Don't talk about it, white elephants, right? Don't think about white elephants. So if I say something like, parties are really bad. Going to parties, I'm an introvert. Parties are just like the wrong thing. They're overwhelming for me. Well, a party is just a very broad generalization. And it doesn't really help me get into it. What is it about parties that is difficult for me? If I just keep the idea party, party, party. But if I look at it more carefully, I find that, well, I like the people who are there. I like the food that's there. Sometimes I like the music that's there. But what I find difficult about parties is that I have to talk to so many different people, and all the repetition of seeing a lot of different people. My mind kind of doesn't work so well with that, and so seeing one at a time or a few at a time is really nice. But it's the rapidity of all the change. So if I understand that it's the rapidity of all the people I see, then maybe I could kind of hang out on the balcony, or outside in the yard, and a few people who come out, I can see, and I can find a way to be there that works for me. But as long as it's the party that I'm reacting to as a whole, then, there's no leeway, there's no room to kind of find a way with it. The same thing with us. And so if we have an identity, I am, and you fill in the blank, we can generalize about how we are. And then it's hard to get in there and understand who are we, and then we react to the generalization. And I know one person who, I think he kind of does it somewhat, not completely believing it, but it's a really deep complex where he says, "I'm bad. I'm bad. Can you tell me that I'm not bad?" And bad. What's bad? And that's just a generalization. It's a concept. Or and there's all these ways we see ourselves. We hold ourselves. This is who I am, and it's one of the sources of suffering is the generalized view of identity that we have about who we are. And there can be a lot of suffering. So the five aggregates are ways of beginning to tease apart, go behind the curtain of the generalizations, and have a different perspective and vantage point in which to understand our lives. And as Andrea said last night, the five are usually translated into English as form, feeling, perception, mental formations. Though the word mental is not in the word, it's just simply formations. And then consciousness. Form, feeling, perceptions, formations, and consciousness. And these are kind of the elements in which we're working with here at the retreat. So this morning we had instructions on, for example, being with our breathing, the breath. And so the breathing, the sensations that come into play as we breathe, that's part of our form, our body. The form here for the time being means the body sensations. So the instructions were, bring your attention to the body, bring your attention to the bodily sensations. And that's, using the first of the aggregates. As we do this, and as we settle in, one of the things you'll become aware of in the course of the day is whether things are pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. chances are that sooner or later today you became aware that some of you, that things were unpleasant. Many of you who raised your hands had to do with unpleasant things. And you become really clearly aware this is unpleasant. But if you stay with your breathing, you might feel that your breath sometimes is uncomfortable, it's tight or constricted. Sometimes it feels very nice and smooth and flowing, it just feels really nice, it's pleasant. That's the second aggregate, that of feeling tone, the pleasant, unpleasant, or not pleasant or unpleasant, neither pleasant nor unpleasant. And you know, it kind of comes sometimes in its own way, and sometimes we get oriented and relate a lot to whether things are pleasant or unpleasant. We can make whole universes of reactivity and generalizations, or we get oriented towards what's pleasant, towards what's unpleasant. In terms of meditation practice, within reason, it's good to orient yourself to appreciate the pleasantness of the experience of meditation. So it's not always going to be pleasant, but it's good to notice that when the breath is pleasant, when the experience of being settled is pleasant, there's a certain kind of pleasure that can happen, just the fact that you are present for what's true. So even though it's very difficult and painful what's going on emotionally or any kind, the fact that you're with yourself and present, it's a gift, and it can be a certain kind of pleasure that comes with just knowing that you're with what's true. So that sense of pleasure or satisfaction or gratification that comes with just being with what is something that supports us. And we are looking in the practice for a certain kind of modest support from what feels good, what feels right, satisfying, pleasant. And here with the in meditation, the pleasures of meditation that will slowly begin to appear. Second aggregate. And then there's the recognizing of it, or the perception of it. And perception here generally means the label or the label or the thing that we do. So, this object that I have up here in my hand is black and spherical and hard and cold and all these things. And that doesn't tell me the label of what it is. Generally, for us here in the meditation hall, this is a bell. So to see it as a bell is a simple label. The word we call perception in English, the sanya, means kind of like the label or the very simple perceiving of what it is. In another context, this might be a soup bowl, or a begging bowl, or a flower vase. You put flowers. We could use this in different ways, and we'd recognize it as something else. But functionally, we recognize it in here as a bell. And so when we say, bring your attention to your body, bring your attention to your breathing, have your attention with, if I feel where you're tense and then relaxing in your body, all that is using very simple labels, concepts that we then play with, we utilize to help us be present. As we stay present meditating with the breath, for example, at some point you might notice that there is tension. It's a very simple recognition. Oh, there's tension, or there's pressure, or there's ease. Or you might, very simple labels. The mind does it almost without any effort. It's just kind of a simple functioning of the mind to cognize, to recognize what is there. That's beyond just the simplest sensations of it, but more the idea of what's there. And so we're in that territory. This is what we're doing. The mental formations has to do with, among other things, what we do with that material, the mental inner world of desires, intentions, reactions, liking, not liking. There's all this, the whole universe of what the mind does to it all. And that's different. So like, for example, if I feel pressure in my knee, the knee would be the label, perhaps. The feeling or the pressure could be the label, but the sensation of pressure is the form, is the first aggregate. If it's pleasant or unpleasant, if it's unpleasant, that's the second aggregate, which is the feeling tone. But then there's, I hate the knee, or I used to have a lot of self-pity for my knee pain when I first started meditating. Oh, poor Gil. And poor Gil. Oh, It's so hard. Oh, why am I doing this? Oh, it was sad. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to feel sorry for me. I mean, that's what self-pity is, right? So that's all mental formations, the reactivity, the reactive emotions that come with it. And so it's if you just take the whole thing as just one big generalization, this day is shot. This is a terrible day. But if you start kind of looking more deeply, what's actually here? Well, what's actually here? There's pressure in my knee. It's unpleasant. There's a recognizing of the knee, recognizing of the unpleasantness, the recognizing of the pressure, which is the perception. And then there's a whirlwind of ideas and thoughts and associations and memories and projections into the future that go on. So what helps is if you can start teasing these apart and see each thing for itself, then when you see the mental formations, the mental reactivity, you can see it as that. You see it as an activity. So as we're meditating, at first, the first day especially, as you meditate, you might first notice the mind is thinking a lot, very active and reactive and all that. And generally over time, to some degree, maybe small degree, things settle down. Some of the things you were thinking about and caught at first day were often bring with us momentum of our thoughts and concerns from our daily life. And then as the retreat goes along, those start to fall away. And we start noticing shifts and changes in our mental formations and what goes on in our minds. And some of you will come to appreciate some of those changes. The mind will get a little bit quieter, not so caught in all its concerns. And we're looking for that. It's not that you want to be attached to it or expect it too much, but it's actually very helpful to appreciate this movement towards a mind that's mental, the formations, the activity of the mind calms down, slows down, gets still, less jumping around, less reactive. And then there's last aggregate is consciousness, the general awareness that's able to take it all in, take all the other four aggregates in, basically. So part of this process is learning these different aggregates, kind of being able to recognize and tease apart what's going on in a very simple way, and to begin having them supportive of you, having them be in it kind of more healthy and aligned or beneficial. So to slowly to have the breathing, perhaps, the sensations of breathing be more comfortable, more pleasant, to have the recognition of what's happening, to begin recognizing some of the nice things that are happening, some of the beneficial things. It's pleasant, more relaxed, more open. Some of us have a very strong bias and tendencies to orient ourselves to notice particular things. And so if we think that some people who are chronically afraid, the orientation is, where's the dangers here? If you're chronically greedy for sensual delights, where's the good things going on? You're kind of looking around, so we orient that way. If you think that you're bad, like I didn't used to think I was bad, but I used to think that I was wrong. I had this great ability to, think I was wrong and guilty for just about anything. Whatever I was doing it the wrong way. It's a great way of suffering. But, it was my policy. And so I was always kind of lookout for how I was doing things wrong, to get justification. So I wasn't like unbiased in how I saw the world, but I would pick up particular, or look in particular ways and pick up some perceptions, some concepts that I would look at. As we kind of settle in, we want to be able to begin to loosen up on the usual ways in which we perceive and begin perceiving things that are more supportive of us, more helpful. So it's more helpful to perceive the body, to notice the body, to be in the body, than it is to be in the fight you had last week. And you're thinking about reviewing it, coming up with a better rejoinder than you did last week. But just kind of better to be right here. And so you want to be with your perceptions, your awareness here. So you want to maybe be able to put down perception of what's wrong, and maybe it's helpful to perceive what's right, what's useful, what's the good thing that's happening here. Oh, I'm settling in. I'm no longer having to think about work, but now I'm just, it's really nice to just be here. And now I can, I'm really tasting my food in a way that maybe I haven't tasted in food for weeks. I'm just really there at the meals, tasting the food. That's really good. Or you find that you are really present for your work meditation. And so you're really there perceiving, you know, the dishes and the water and the suds. And your perceptions go and pay attention to the details in a very nice way. It just kind of becomes alive and vivid, the experience, because you start, you know, choosing to pay attention to what's here in a way rather than, you know, some of the usual ways in which the mind goes, which is not useful. So the idea in meditation is to start kind of helping these aggregates be more working in your favor. And there's a reason for this. And that is that as you get settled in and start tuning into the body more and being familiar with the body, as you start, which is the form aggregate, as you start kind of maybe being a little more settled and things are more pleasant and start seeing more clearly the pleasant and unpleasant, as you start seeing the perceptions, what you perceive and the choices you make and how you see and perceive, as you start seeing the mental activity of the mind, the huge universe of activity, one of the things that starts happening is you start seeing that these things are not fixed. They're not nouns, they're verbs. They're not things, they're activities. And you might see that first with the mental formations, that you see that, you know, that your thinking goes on and on, and but it's also intermittent, and you see, you after a while you realize you were caught up in something and then you're not, and then you notice your thinking gets quieter, and then you realize some things go away, and you realize that some of your perceptions that you had had and judgments you had of things were wrong, and you see there are other ways, and you see that your activity in wanting a lot is an activity of the mind that abates and quiets. You see that hostility that you might have abates and quiets. You see, like, a lot of these activity of the mind are activities. They're not fixed things. And they come and they go. And so we begin appreciating that the activities of the mind, because they're activities and processes, are not something which are we're stuck with, but they can change over time. They can change for the better. And we don't have to buy into them. We don't have to feed them. And so they settle away. And it's more and more what we come to realize and appreciate is that these five aggregates are activities or processes. And the first one is, and so that's when the first one, it's very interesting to look at, because the word in Pali is rupa, R-U-P-A, which in the time of the Buddha before him, it seemed that what it meant was more, it meant more like appearance, how things appear. And they would talk about the rupa of a person meant how they appear to other people, their shape, the skin color, their hair, their things like that. And people were known in ancient India primarily by two things. If you wanted to know a person, you knew their appearance and you knew their name. Those are the two big important things. And so the word rupa meant appearance. But the Buddha turned that around, and rather than referring to it as appearance, which can seem like a noun, he translated it as a process, and I'll talk to you about it in a little while, but as but for our purposes, as the process of sensing things, sensations. And so from the inside out, how we feel things from our body from the inside out. So the process of the feelings, the feeling tones, pleasant, unpleasant, and neither pleasant nor unpleasant. So feelings are defined by the process of feeling. Perception by the process of perceiving. Formations by the process of forming, and consciousness the process of cognizing. But then he does a word play, the Buddha does a word play with form, and it kind of works in English if you do it this way. It's not quite the same word play, but it kind of works. Form, the first aggregate, is deforming. It means meaning's kind of like it's breaking down. It's kind of unforming. It's And that's kind of interesting. And so formations is what forms, but the body deforms, breaks down. So in terms of what the aggregate, the mental formations create the concepts that we live in. And in relationship to our body and our appearance, we know that we can create an identity, an idea of ourselves, of our body, our appearance. I'm young, I'm still 20, and all that stuff, but then the body deforms. The body, doesn't cooperate, it breaks down. And my body is not 20 anymore, and it might be my identity. I'm still holding myself or want to hold myself that way. So the mental formations holds on to an identity of what we look like, but then the body doesn't cooperate if our identity is around our body and our appearance. So there's this word play that kind of works with this idea of form deforms. But more important, what it is that if once we start kind of tuning into the body, we're learning to tune into the body as something separate from the ideas and concepts we have of it. And it's a real relief. It can be a real relief to be on the inside of our body, feeling it as it actually feels, and actually sense the sensations, independent of the ideas we have. And in terms of our body, there's a lot of suffering around human bodies because something is not, we're not just too big, too little, too this, too that, too gray, too brown, too the hair is this, the hair is that, whatever, all these things that we do. I spent a lot of time in, I think it was eighth grade, measuring the distance from my nose to my forehead because I was concerned that I was going bald. So I had this way of measuring it, my finger like this. I'd put my finger right here and then measure, because one of my fingers would just reach up to my hairline. And I can tell you it hasn't changed since eighth grade. But I was, very concerned about my appearance. And I suffered a lot about my appearance and what people thought about me and how I looked. And some of it had to do with fashions of the time. And, was I up to the fashions with my hair this way or that way, and and a lot of that is comparative thinking. And so a lot of people suffer because there's a mental formation, activity of the mind, comparing themselves to others. And then if you compare yourself to some people, you come out good. If you compare yourself to other people, you come out not so good. And so if you live that game, up and down, the mood swings and flows depending, who you're comparing yourself to. But if we don't play the appearance game, which can make us feel not so good, or set us up to feel bad, because if you build yourself up, you'll crash. The alternative in Buddhism, these aggregates, is to not be concerned with the appearance, but be concerned with what it feels like from the inside out, the sensation level. And even if it's unpleasant, it begins to free us from the mental formations, ideas that we add on top of it. So the sensation level from the, pressure and tension and heat and cold and hard and soft and fluidity and movement and all these different things that come into play as we're in our body. And one of the things that I can confidently say about in all my years of practicing in monasteries and temples and Buddhist centers and even my reading of Buddhism is that Buddhism puts a tremendous emphasis on being present for your body, being in your body, being with your body, kind of dropping down into your body and kind of changing the mode, the perception of where you give your attention to. And rather than giving primary attention to the world of mental formations, thoughts, ideas, concepts, memories, plans, is to give a lot of attention to the here and now of the sensations of the body. And learn how to be with that in a gracious way. Learn how to be with it in a relaxed way, to relax into it, to feel it. And Andrea this morning talked about being with our experience. And I find this very nice, this idea of being with. Some people attend to the breath, or watch the breath from the control tower up in the head. And I used to think that concentration meant having this laser focus from the control tower looking straight down at whatever the experience was. And but the idea, the expression being with, accompanying the experience, being with the experience kind of from the inside out. So with the breathing, to feel and sense it. Now some people have a hard time understanding how this is done, but so maybe these kinds of examples are helpful. That, you know, if you have been cold and chilled, and then you go out and stand in the sun, and you really savor and feel the satisfaction of feeling the warmth hitting your body, the way you feel that warmth, you kind of take it in with your pores, you take it into your flesh, you take it into your body. You don't think about it. You don't analyze it. You have to kind of really feel it. Or if you are you know, if you're going to eat some very good tasty food, to really taste the food, you might even close your eyes if it's really special, and really let it really savor and enter into your tongue in a full way and feel it right there. You don't stay up in the control tower and say, well, you know, what is the chemical compounds of that flavor, and you know, and that, you know, it's just that doesn't help you really feel it. Or music, if you know, to close your eyes and really kind of hear the music with your whole body, just let it kind of vibrate in you. And I think these wonderful low-riding cars that drive around with these big speakers, boom, 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 I love them. And they, because they have to, I love them when they're really good and the bass is really low. And you know, I just, I feel my body, that's good. really, from the inside out, what does it feel like to sense and be with? And it's a beautiful art and skill to learn how to do this. So one of the great places to learn is when things are uncomfortable in the body. So there might be pain or other kinds of discomfort. And to learn to kind of ease into it, to be with it, to feel it, to yield to it, to open to it, to I don't know if this works for you, but it works for me, this idea that I kind of bring my attention into the middle of places where I feel some tension. I had a headache today for a little while. And so I brought my attention into the head that was hurt. And then I just imagined that I'm making space for it. And imagined that I wasn't trying to get rid of it, but I let the headache, the pain that I felt, release and get bigger. Kind of like rest into my skull. You know, kind of rest back into my skull. And it's a nice way of just feeling, being the inside and feeling, making space for things to be there. And so all these ways, you know, how do you get in to really feel? And part of the advantage of this is that then you can learn with time to rest in that experience, to rest in the experience of the body. And the body becomes a fantastic alternative to the thoughts, to the ideas, to the generalizations, to the desires and the wants and this and that. And the body is in some ways a really good place to give your attention to. The Buddha said a very interesting thing. He said, if you're going to identify with something, it's better to identify with a body than it is to identify with the mind. But I don't think he meant like your appearance, but to identify, you know, really feel and be present for the experience of your body. Relax into it, be with it. Let the body be your teacher. The body is a great teacher. After the Buddha died, someone came to Ananda, his disciple, and said, now that the teacher is dead, who will be your teacher? And Ananda said, mindfulness of the body. That's, you know, that elevates the role of the body pretty big if your body gets to be your Buddha. Isn't that great? It's that instructive. That's what you learn so much. Such an important reference point. This first aggregate of form, of body, of sensations, is such a useful reference point for understanding what's going on, to begin teasing apart the generalizations we have and begin seeing things as they actually are. Seeing, the more deeper and deeper you can get into your body, the more obvious it is that a thought is a thought, an idea is an idea, as opposed to being an idea and believing that's the truth. So in the beginning of a retreat, we put a lot of emphasis often on being present for the body. Often we do the focus on the breath the first day, and we do the body more fully. Tomorrow we'll give more instructions for the body. But the breath is part of the body. And for many people, there's something useful about beginning with the breath. The breath is a little bit stabilizing, a little calming. The rhythm of breathing in and out is kind of nice and soothing and settling. Because it's kind of more or less constantly going on, sometimes with the breath, it's easier to notice if your mind has wandered, and you have some place to come back to. Come back here, come back here. But it isn't just a matter of watching the breath, but kind of being with it, feeling kind of riding the breath, riding the sensations of the breath. If you feel it in the chest or in the belly, the expansion and contraction, riding them. Some people have the image of like the wings of a bird that are flapping in the wind or flapping in the air. So the expansion and contraction of the torso, just kind of ride that and feel it. The sensations of the air against the nostrils, some people feel it there. And to really kind of feel the alternation of maybe a cool and warmth as the air goes in and out. To feel it perhaps like what I've done sometimes, imagine it's like the waves washing up and down off the shore. So I can really stay there and feel it, just be with it. The more you can be in your body, the more you're going to be in the present moment. It's a training to be present, to be in your body. The body's always in the present moment. Your mind may or may not be. And so to help you be more and more in the present, come back to your body. Check in with your body. Be here with your body. And then in terms of mental formations, can you keep those simple? You don't need much of them. But can you use those mental formations that support you, that kind of encourage you along? This is mental formation. Is it's good to be on a retreat. It's good to be in the body. That's an idea that you have in your mind. It's good to stay right here and explore and get to be here and learn how to be with the body. As we learn to be with the body, even with the discomfort, the body begins to become more softer or more fluid, and becomes clearer and clearer over time that the body is a process. It's a process of many sensations arising and passing. So we'll do a little exercise. Maybe this will convey some of this to you. And that is, if you close your eyes, or before you close your eyes, you can maybe look at your hand, your right hand, and just kind of see if you can think about all the concepts and ideas you have about your right hand that you've carried with you your lifetime. And some of you might feel your fingers are too short, too long, too fat, too skinny. Your fingernails, lots of ideas about fingernails. Too cracked, too this. Maybe the wrong color nail polish. Ideas of hands, do we have? So some of those ideas of our hands could be painful. Some of those ideas could be, very happy to have our hands. We have all these ideas. So now close your eyes. Take a deep breath. See if you can let go of all that. And now bring your attention into your right hand. And feel the sensations of your right hand. Feel the sensations of the back of the hand, the palm of the hand, the fingers. You might feel tingling, pulsing, warmth, coolness, heaviness, lightness. You might feel softness of the hand against maybe some cloth, roughness. And take a few moments to see if you can enter into the world of those sensations in and of themselves, just sensations. And notice that if you are relaxed and just with the sensations kind of shift and change, come in and out of existence from moment to moment maybe, pulse. And perhaps you can feel that if you're only with the world of sensations, it's kind of like there is no boundaries to the hand. The boundaries of sensations are not quite so clear. And if you're able to get really into it, just the sensations in and of themselves, even the idea of hand, is not really needed. In fact, the idea of a hand, as accurate as it is, doesn't really represent the richness of the sensations of the experience. So from the inside out of the hand, it feels one way. From the mental formations of comparing ourselves to others and ideas we have about hands and what it should have been and what's wrong with it and all kinds of things, it feels very different. There's a certain kind of relief that can happen when we start entering into the world of sensations. Just feel it in and of itself, how it actually is. Learn how to relax into it, open into the sensations in the body, yield to them, make space for the sensations, sense them, allow for them, allow the thoughts and ideas to recede into the background, so that what we perceive, our perceptions go less into the ideas we have, thoughts we have, but what we perceive more and more is we perceive the immediacy of our physical experience, the sensations. Our perceptions, what we perceive and choose to perceive and give our perceptions to, is very important. It kind of feeds whatever we're focusing on. But if you perceive, let your perception, your attention go into that body, the process of the body, the activity of the body, the sensations that come and go, they have space to unfold. They have space to work themselves out. They have space to relax. They have space to open up. And the body starts becoming a little different, very different way of being in the world than if the body is just something we carry around and does our bidding, and to feel from the inside out. And part of this loosening up on our experience, making more space for it, being less reactive to it, not being full of desires or aversions so much, so tight and caught up in it, is to begin to appreciate that everything is a process, everything is an activity. There are no nouns. And because there are no fixed things in our immediate experience in these five aggregates, it means that it is possible for all these things to get quieter, get stiller, less agitated. And this in turn helps us to see more clearly what is going on, to see more clearly the specificity of form, of feeling, of perception, of mental formations, of consciousness. And as we can see all these things more clearly, and we can see the particular mental formations of wanting as just wanting, as aversion as just aversion, not a big deal, not good or bad, just wanting that we don't have to buy into. We just let it be. Let it be or let it go. Or we can see our emotions, impatience or resentment or happiness. Just very simple, just what it is, mental formations that come with the other five aggregates, come with body sensations, feelings, perceptions. And begin having space for this stuff, beginning to be a little more relaxed with what's happening, letting it be. So the body or your form is the first aggregate. And in some ways, your body is the temple. Your body is the sacred house that you can enter into. It has such great importance and value. So as you continue here at the retreat, you might experiment and be curious about coming back into your body as often as you can. Be in the temple. Be in this wonderful container and sensations and body. Because the more you can kind of tune in to your body, be present for your body, the more you can allow your body to reveal itself to you, the more you can let the vitality of your body radiate and show yourself here, the more clearly you'll be able to identify or recognize the other aggregates as we go along here in the retreat. One body at a time, one moment at a time.